This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm Ben Grubb. On tonight's edition of The Informer, we'll be speaking with Todd Fernando, the chairperson of the organising committee for Victoria's upcoming national retreat for trans and gender diverse Aboriginal people. The state government announced the retreat, the first of its kind in mainland Australia, to mark International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia earlier this week. We will also be chatting with Greens sexuality spokesperson Senator Robert Sims about the Greens' push to remove religious exemptions from anti-discrimination laws to protect the rights of LGBTI Australians. On tonight's edition of The Informer, we're taking a look at the Victorian government's announcement that later this year a national retreat will be held for trans and gender diverse Aboriginals. And right now we're joined by a member of the retreat's advisory group, Todd Fernando. Thanks for joining us, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
Firstly, can you tell us a little bit about this retreat?
Yeah, so the retreat was set up in response to the 2015 Victorian Koori Youth Summit, and where we saw myself and Madeline Clark, who's another native queer theorist in Australia, talk about the issues in which Aboriginal, trans and gender diverse people are facing and the lack of program in the space to allow for them to talk about their issues and what it is that they need their governments to do.
How did you personally get involved with it?
As a queer person myself, these issues are at the forefront of my everyday lived realities, and so I think it's important that as a member of an Aboriginal community, but also as a member of a queer community, that somehow that intersection can work and work in unique ways. And so knowing and understanding through the research about the issues that are being faced by Aboriginal, trans and gender diverse people, I think it's really important that the space is occurring. So I you know, got in touch with some people who, you know, have the power to create these programs, and the Victorian Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality was one of those.
Now, I understand you're doing a PhD on a similar topic.
I am. My PhD sits in medical anthropology, but looks at the way in which Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander queer people have been framed in policy under a sexualized focus.
Why do you think it's important to provide a safe space for LGBTI Aboriginals, especially brother boys and sister girls, to talk about their experiences and discuss the issues facing their community?
I think at the core of what the conversations on the retreat will be is how we as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander genderqueer, gender diverse and trans people exist and operate at a level where we are seeing still a lot of taboo conversations on sexual health, on sexuality within the Indigenous communities. And a lot of conversations within the sort of the non-Indigenous community, especially the queer community, around where Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people fit within that. And so it's a conversation about building a framework in which we can tackle homophobia, racism and many other topics for life for these people.
How are LGBTI youth treated within the community at the moment?
Within Aboriginal communities, there's quite a lot of homophobia, and this is perpetuated from many different avenues. Namely, it's a continuation throughout the colonisation process of missionaries coming into communities and talking about religion and the impacts. We know the impacts that religion plays on sexuality, and so it's a continuation of that, unfortunately. And the conversations around sexuality become almost silenced, because we see a lot of conversations that happen in the community where they confuse the idea of sexuality being a part of a culture or not being a part of a culture, which was in many ways perpetrated by Aboriginal sportsman Anthony Mundine a couple of years ago in his comments about sexuality and homosexuality in particular not being a part of the Aboriginal community or the Aboriginal culture. And so that in many ways polarise the Aboriginal community to think about where our positions on sexuality and what it is that we can have a conversation about. And when then we look to the policies and what the governments are saying, you know, generally they frame Aboriginal youth within three paragraphs, which is a little concerning considering 60.7% of Aboriginal people are under the age of 24. And so I don't know how we can encapsulate an entire 60% of a population in three paragraphs, let alone, you know, talk about a conversation in which policy is driving change in communities of trans and queer people.
Now, the details of the retreat, what's going to happen when these people go to it?
Yeah, so we're inviting to a national focus and asking other state governments to pitch in to help send cohorts of genderqueer and trans people in. And once they get into Melbourne, we'll create a space in which they can talk about their issues within their communities, what it is that they're facing, the lack of human services within regional and remote communities, and just an overall build a conversation and a space in which Aboriginal, trans and gender diverse people can sit and have a conversation on what it means to be Aboriginal and trans and gender diverse and queer. And it is important for that. Another unique aspect of the retreat will see those Aboriginal, trans and gender diverse people who live in rural and remote areas who don't have access to human services to have a day in Melbourne where they can speak with specialists and health services, where they can talk about their issues that they're facing, set up counselling meetings with surgeons and physicians to talk about how they begin their transformation.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. In the studio with me now is Todd Fernando, the chairperson of the organising committee for Victoria's upcoming national retreat for trans and gender diverse Aboriginal people. Now, the retreat will allow queer Aboriginal people to be the leaders and decision makers for their own community. I imagine in queer and other spaces, this isn't often the case.
No, it's quite a case in which we're still being silenced in many ways on our issues. And I know that many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander queer people are worried that the conversations, while very important on gay marriage, might silence in many ways the issues that we're still facing as a community. We have trans and gender diverse people still being murdered and hurt and have violent attacks on them because of homophobic attitudes. And so in many ways, we're trying to raise the attention to all of the issues that we face and in many ways change the conversation from a deficit approach to having a positive conversation about how amazing it is to be queer and gender diverse and not just constantly focusing on the negative issues, but also pulling in the positives. I think it's a real unique setting that we can do that. We can start talking about issues that affect us all, not both positively and negatively.
Now, this is the first retreat of its kind, and it's a great first step, but what else do you think could be done to increase visibility and focus on the unique issues and or challenges faced by trans and gender diverse Aboriginal people?
I think the conversation within the Aboriginal community definitely needs to move towards a focus in which we celebrate this diversity, and we often don't talk about the diversity of Aboriginal people in general, and we fail to diversify them in many ways, such as culturally, geographically, educationally. We have, you know, Aboriginal people privately and publicly educated and exist within all class forms and societies, yet we generalize them and homogenize them to a massive group of disadvantage when we are experiencing in many ways a lot of successes over the years. And so I think this conversation adds to the corpus and then the body of knowledge of what we know about Aboriginal people, and it allows us to diversify our thinking and diversify our conversations about the issues, but also the positive successes that we are seeing.
How can people get involved? Where do they go?
There's a few little sites online, and there's a couple of pages on Facebook in which sort of update people on trans and genderqueer Aboriginal people issues, which is the Brother Boy and Sister Girls Facebook page. And there's another Facebook page called Anthem, which is A-N-Y-T-H. which looks at the online sexual health education and the move in that space. But over the coming months, we'll be releasing a lot more visible advertisement about the space and where it is that we can go.
Great. And just on sexual health, I saw recently that the organisation called YEAR was defunded essentially by the federal government. Mm-hmm. Is that going to have an impact on the Aboriginal youth?
Look, if I'm honest, no. YEAR is an amazing organisation doing amazing things, but in terms of the Aboriginal youth space, it wasn't really a space in which was inclusive, and that was nobody's fault. But and I'm not talking about that in a negative way, but it just is our issues are a lot more diverse and a lot more deeper than what YEAR's focus and scope was.
And where can Aboriginal people go for sexual health?
Yeah, so around the country we've got different sites set up, especially in Sydney we've got ACON and most Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander medical services are getting used to moving the space for trans and gender and queer Aboriginal people. And so there's a lot more services coming available, but we hope for more.
Thank you very much for joining us in the studio, Todd.
No, thank you.
Now, the retreat will be held in regional Victoria between November 11 and 13. And if you want more information, you can visit the Facebook page.
Or you can check out the Gender and Sexuality Commissioner's website in the coming days.
Thanks again. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. Joining me now is Greens sexuality spokesperson Senator Robert Sims about the Greens' push to remove religious exemptions from anti-discrimination laws to protect the rights of LGBTI Australians. In Australia, religious organisations such as the Salvation Army and schools can discriminate against volunteers and teachers. For example, you can be fired for being gay or having a child out of wedlock. The laws have been around for some time now, and the Greens want to get rid of them. Senator Sims, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, do you think it's fair for teachers to be fired at, say, Christian schools for having a child out of wedlock?
No, I don't. And I don't think it's fair for teachers to be fired for being gay or to be denied employment on the basis of their sexuality or gender identity for that matter. And that's one of the reasons why the Greens are campaigning to remove these religious exemptions, because really in 21st century Australia, you shouldn't be denied employment on the basis of your sexuality or your gender identity. You should be judged on your capacity to do a job. And whether you're gay or straight, that doesn't impact on your capacity to be a good teacher. So I'm concerned about this. We've got a lot of private schools in this country that are receiving government funds, and they should be complying with anti-discrimination laws. They shouldn't be given the right to discriminate in this way.
Why do you think these laws have been able to stick around for so long? I mean, can you give us a bit of history of when they were introduced and how it all came about?
Well, the exemptions have been in place for some time, and the Labor Party, when they were in government, did have a review looking at this, the previous Labor government, and back in 2013, they then decided to drop the idea of removing the exemptions, and so we've had them remain. And the argument that seems to be put is that somehow by removing these exemptions, you're attacking religious freedom. And obviously, religious freedom in our democracy is a very important principle, but it shouldn't take precedent over the rights of all Australians to be protected by the law and for the rights of Australians to equal opportunity. And we talked about the school example before, but it also potentially has impacts on people who are accessing social services as well. And so if you have a faith-based homeless shelter, for instance, they could deny shelter to a transgender young person or a young person who's gay. And really, that's a very disturbing outcome, I think.
For listeners who are, I guess, listening in, I actually worked at a Christian school and I hadn't come out at that stage. And so I actually had to sign a document that basically said that I had to comply to the Christian values. And we actually did have a teacher that was fired from the school and or at least put on review for, you know, having a child out of wedlock. And, you know, this is actually a thing that happens and it might surprise a few people. I'm guessing to you, Senator Sims, why do you think that the Labor Party hasn't come on board with your idea here and also, I guess, the Liberal Party?
I think what we're seeing is the Labor Party being captive to the conservative forces on their party. And likewise with the Liberals, you've got people who have very conservative views, the likes of Corey Bernardi on the Liberal side, the likes of Don Farrell on the Labor side. And these people really are holding LGBTI rights hostage in the Parliament. And it is disappointing to see the Labor Party's position on this. I mean, I saw today the comments by their Attorney General spokesperson, Mark Dreyfus, where he said that the Labor Party doesn't support discrimination and that they want to address this issue. But then I saw the opposition leader making some quite ambiguous comments about this. So it's not clear exactly what the Labor Party's position is. And really, they need to show some leadership on this issue.
Now, I think we've all seen that the Racial Discrimination Act and 18C, the Liberal Party has wanted to get rid of that so that people can have a right to be a bigot. And now we see this. I guess I wanted to get your thoughts on what you thought of the removal of Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act would do to Australia if it did ever get up.
Yeah, and look, the Greens don't support removing that, and we've been strong advocates against doing that in the Parliament. I mean, really, I think we have to recognise that In any democracy, obviously freedom of speech is an important concept, but that has to be balanced against other rights and freedoms as well. And just like I talked before about religious freedom not taking precedent over other important rights, likewise, freedom of speech shouldn't take precedent over the rights of members of the community to feel safe and protected from persecution and vilification. That's a very important legal principle. And so to say that the right to speak your mind should trump that is a very dangerous proposition. Just like I think to say that religious freedom should trump equal opportunity and equal protection under the law is a dangerous concept. I mean, why should religious organisations get a get-out-of-jail-free card? I think a lot of Australians would be concerned about that.
This, of course, also brings up the issue that the church enjoys both tax and law exemptions. Would you also be pushing tonight for the church to actually comply with Australia's tax laws as well?
Look, that's certainly not part of this policy platform. Certainly an issue I'm happy to look at. It's one that has been raised with me before.
And do you have a personal view on whether they should be exempt from tax? I mean, I think it's the schools as well, any religious organisation.
Yeah, look, my personal view is that it is appropriate for these organisations to pay their appropriate level of tax. But as I say, it's not really something that's part of our LGBTI policy announcement. We're keeping our focus in these policy documents on the discrimination faced by the LGBTI community, and obviously anti-discrimination laws being strengthened is a key priority within that document.
Just lastly, who decides if a body is religious enough to be allowed to legally discriminate?
Look, that's a good question. I think the way in which that's determined is on the basis of organisations making a particular request of the Commission. So I know that actually there are a lot of religious-based organisations and institutions that don't actually use the exemption. They don't want to use it within their employment or within the services that they provide, and obviously I welcome that. But the reality is that there are a number of other organisations that can do that, and that's one of the reasons why we need to remove the exemption to shut down that avenue and ensure that we have uniform protections for people under the law.
That was Greens Senator Robert Sims. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and I'm sorry about my cold.
That's
okay. Got a nasty cough.
Talk again soon during the campaign.
Thank you.
We asked the Labor Party and the Liberal Party to join us, but unfortunately no one was available. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. Up next, you'll hear from Ruby Susan, who will speak to us about the latest LGBTI news. The Informer journalist Ruby Susan now joins us to talk about the latest LGBTI news. Ruby, what's been happening?
Oh, thanks for having me, Ben. So the big news that we'll be talking today is Catherine McGregor, who is Australia's most senior-ranking transgender military officer until she retired quite recently. She's come forward explaining why she is not supporting the Safe Schools program. Now, this is obviously quite an interesting point of view to have, especially from a trans person, as there is an increasing focus on the trans
community. This is
community.
Like controversy on controversy.
Exactly. No, it's and I think, you know, I do think it's a good to remind ourselves that just because people are within the queer spectrum does not mean they have any of the same ideas. That is an important thing to remember, and this is definitely reminding us of that. Now, the issue she's taking is mostly to do with the fact that she does feel that one of the members who was involved with creating Safe Schools, Roz Ward, is a Trotskyist, and she feels very strongly about Trotskyism, I suppose.
A socialist.
Her words were Trotskyist. I would assume socialist, communist, Marxist. You know, there are a lot of... It's hard to tell. Trotskyist itself is not really a very common term for it. Trotsky, you know, was quite a small... his political ideologies were not that different from that of Stalin. From Lenin or from Marx. But the issue here is that she says that, you know, Ward has... she's anti-capitalism. She's against the Defence Force. And they're all in the wars in the Middle East. So, and she'll... but the issue is, of course, that her main point is that gender dysphoria is a medical condition and so should be treated as such by doctors, and that if your children are sick, you would take them to a doctor, not a columnist, and not, like, you know, not your school special program. Now, I think the big issue that comes out from this is, again, this assumption that has been seen quite a few times by people outside of the community, that parents are going to be on their kids' side, which, of course, is not true. It's why we have huge issues with homelessness in young people within our community. It's one of the biggest issues to do with homelessness and mental health in young people in the community, as well as being able able to access a trans-friendly doctor. So I suppose, never mind the fact that, you know, trans as a medical condition does kind of link to the idea of how homosexuality was a medical condition until the 1990s. You know, she's very much set that as it is a medical thing with symptoms that are outlined in a diagnostic line, which I do feel is not particularly constructive to building on anything. It does kind of create trans as an illness.
Now, we did try to also contact Kate, Catherine hasn't returned our calls, but we will keep trying to get in touch with her. Now, obviously, safe schools is quite a controversial topic in and of itself. The latest in that is, well, we know that the federal government is not going to fund it beyond...
2017.
Yeah. Now, the Victorian government, however, has a different view.
The Victorian government is... intending not only to fully fund it, but to have it in compulsory in state education by 2018. And they are intending to include all information because, as well as rolling back the funding, the federal government actually cut a lot of material specifically around gender and transgender ideas from the program and said that those things would only be available if the youth were to ask for them, which again, of course, involves young people having to out themselves to get the information they need. So that in itself, while we're seeing a really positive response in Victoria, which is, you know, of course, a really positive thing, and we are assuring the safety of young people here, it can be quite disheartening, I think, for members of the community to see what is a trans woman in a very highly respected position basically claim that her clashing with certain political ideologies means that she does not feel comfortable in helping with a program that is shown to be extremely supportive for young trans people. She also has brought up an issue with queer theory, which of course is the third wave queer, like talking about, you know, the idea of gender as a social construct. Now, this of course, you know, is a new theory, and much like, you know, we do see the generational divide in the queer community, as in every community, where there is not always a transfer of knowledge between new ideas and new terminology and the old. And of course, there's a rejection with the old from the, like, you know, the old reject the new reject the old, et cetera, et cetera. But I suppose the issue I have with this is that she needs to, like, you know, there have been a lot of young trans people saying this program has been helpful to them. And it does feel that placing your own political ideologies over the needs of young people who, you know, whose circumstances you can understand on a very personal level, it just seems a little odd to me. Obviously, you know, everyone has the right to their own opinion, but she has chosen to be very vocal about this. This has not been something she has held back on. She has come forward and written pieces about it. She's written several pieces about her issues with the Trotskyist being involved in safe schools. Of course, if a Trotskyist can poison an entire system, it does kind of ask as to what exactly is the problem here. That would be my opinion anyway.
Well, there's a lot there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's quite a lot to unpack. I would recommend checking out the article. It's on The Telegraph.
Her opinion piece, yes, is on the Daily Telegraph website. You can check it out. Thank you very much, Ruby.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Now, thank you to my guest today, Todd Fernando and Senator Robert Sims. Today's head producer was myself and Ruby Susan. A full rundown of today's show will be on the Joy website shortly. For a podcast of today's program and other stories, visit joy.org.au/The Informer. The Informer will be back on Monday evening at 6:30. Up next is Stand Up Straight. I'm Ben Grubb.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.